21-1908, Travel Century v. Tropp. Mr. White, please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Eric White for Appellant David Tropp. After 9-11, Congress mandated that TSA inspect every bag. Mr. Tropp and his company, Safe Skies, devised a method to do so with special locks. Locks that the patents tell us are special because they can be opened by a single master key across different kinds of locks and different manufacturers, with an identification structure printed on them that signals to a luggage screener that the master key will open the lock, and a prior agreement with TSA to do that.
Excuse me, Judge Shaw here. Let me ask you a question. You have your special lock having a combination lock portion and a master key lock portion. And I understand from the patent and from your arguments how this arrangement operates. The difficulty that I'm having is it seems that there's nothing in the claims or in the specification that talks about the internal operation of the lock. In other words, any changes to how the lock structure operates inside. And respectfully, it seems to me that that's what our cases require. And that's the difficulty I'm having, I think, with your side of the case.
Well, a couple things on that. First of all, we know, going back to the GDR Holdings case, one of the foundational cases, post-Alice cases from this court, that patents need not be technologically complex to satisfy Alice scrutiny. And, you know, this has come up in later cases, too, the McRow case. There are lots of cases where there are technological complexities, and that doesn't move the needle one way or the other, because the focus is whether the patents describe a method that solves a specific problem in the industry. And that's what happens here. I mean, the changes to the lock are just one part of the method patent claim. And although there are changes to the manufacturing process of locks so that you can open them across sort of three-dial combinations, four-dial combinations and that, what the patent is really doing here is taking all of those locks and saying you can put an identification structure on them, you can have a special keyhole for this master key that will open them across all the locks, and then combined with an agreement with TSA to match up the identification structure with the master key, that solves the process of how do you screen millions of bags quickly and efficiently. So if this were simply an apparatus patent, then it would be conceivable that you'd expect to see more diagrams and things showing internal lock mechanism changes, but it is a method patent, and it's just simply one part of the method that there is this improved lock. I don't know if that answers Your Honor's question, but I just want to make sort of three simple points at the outset.
Can I just pursue that a little
sure.
bit? One way to look at this, which I'm sure you've thought about, is that if you put aside the question of any internal changes in the lock itself, what you have is almost definitionally abstract. You have agreement in the marketplace with other people who are, or entities who are relevant to the use of the thing, right? Methods of I forget what our term is, you know, human relations or operations or something. And then you have, you know, pure, display of information. So the only thing that is at least potentially going on about a change in something the physical component, something technological in that sense, is the possibility that there's something different when you use a single master key component with a multiplicity of different combination components. And I think it is as to that, that as Judge Shaw said, one can find nothing, either in the claim or in the spec, and this is putting aside whether this is something that you actually argued in your opposition brief to the 101 in the district court, which I think you didn't.
Well, a couple responses to that. First of all, it is in the patent itself. If you look at the specifications in the patent, for instance, in the 537 patent, column 4, lines 56 to 59, this defines special lock, the term used in the claim, by referencing figures 1 to 4 collectively, which show a variety of lock configurations, single dial lock, a three dial, and a four dial lock, all of which can be opened by a, quote, master key, singular. It says that that can open any kind of combination lock. This is made even clearer in the 728 patent at column 4, lines 56 to 59, which defines a special lock as locks having a multiplicity of subtypes, such as different sizes, different manufacturing designs, or styles. And then separately, well, for the error preservation point, this was argued below. This case was up on summary judgment, and Mr. Tropp included many details in his statement of material disputed facts.
Right, I guess I just want to focus on that. I don't find anything in the place where you as a party needed to make an argument about what you were relying on, the legal argument, what you were relying on for the asserted inventive concept or even the asserted aspect that takes it out under step one. And that is in, what is it, 294, docket number 294, opposition to summary judgment on the 101. You make some reference to this in the Rule 56.1 statement, which was a joint statement for all three of the simultaneous summary judgment motions. You made some reference to this in your 295 opposition to the prior art summary judgment motion, but I don't see any reference at all to this in your 294 opposition to the 101 summary judgment.
Well, in the opposition to the 101 summary judgment, we talked both for step one and step two about the special lock here. And I think that what the court was construing is the claims and the specifications. And so the definition of special lock is relevant. So it was sort of front and center in that analysis. And there are several places in the statement of disputed material facts where in talking
right,
about...
I know in the 56.1 statement, which you quoted in your reply brief, you do say something about that. Is there anything in this record that gets at what physical difference there might be if you use a single master key component with a number of different combination components, three dials, four dials, or is it just these operate independently, and the claim is use the same one?
There's something that talks about the sort of physical internal working mechanisms of the lock. Instead, it talks about how there are these different kinds of locks. There was never a master key across those kinds of locks. And so there are two things going on, really, as goes to the lock in the claims here. Mm-hmm. One is that there is a master key now that works across all these different locks, and then separately, there is also another change in the physical world where there is an identification structure put across all these locks to signal the use of a master key across these. A master key didn't exist before. Travel Sentry CEO Vermeil says this, and this is in the appendix at 2867, that there was no master key before. We had evidence in the record from Lauterstein, who was at TSA in their checked baggage department, who said that, you know, this simply didn't exist. What TSA had was a collection of some duplicate keys that it had collected over the years that could open mostly keyed locks by several manufacturers. None of that worked across manufacturers. None of that worked across different types of locks. And so there was this guess and check method where TSA, if it had unlimited amount of time to try possible duplicate keys or use lock picks or something else, could try to open these individual locks. But a lot of times that didn't work, and so what TSA was doing was breaking the locks or telling passengers to leave their bags unlocked. And there was no industry solution to that problem. We have in the brief, we talk about how a representative from Samsonite was talking about coming up with a sort of temporary lock solution. So what this did, I mean, there are two things. It's not just all the mechanics of the individual locks. It is part of a method claim where you can have this single identification structure across the variety of locks. And those are changes in the physical world. This is not simply an attempt to patent a contractual arrangement with TSA or any other luggage screener. There are a couple things going on there. And that cross-cuts cases from this court that talk about how when you have a specific method that solves a specific problem in the industry, that's sufficient to pass Alice scrutiny. And, you know, this came up, for instance, in the Eco Services case, where the issue there was a new method for cleaning jet engines. And what the court talked about is you had an entire new process developed by this patent. It didn't go into great technological specificity about how these things happen, but it created a whole new process that solved a problem that was not solved by things before that. And here, you had a whole new problem arise after 9/11. I mean, it's important for the court to keep in mind what was going on before that. This is, you know, people would have to, there were sort of sporadic attempts to check people's luggage, and people would have to stay with the bag or something. It was a very sort of time-consuming process, and it's completely impossible to do that when you have a congressional mandate that now every bag must be checked. There is a limited amount of time to do that. And so the benefit here is the comprehensive solution described by the patent that makes some changes to the locks in terms of how they can be opened, how they can be identified, and then couples that with an arrangement with a screening entity to make that whole process come together. So I just want to emphasize a couple of other things, because this court has talked about industry praise and success is important, both at Alice Step 1, this is the, for instance, the data engine case and the core wireless case, and at Step 2, the Bascom case and the Selston case. And we think this is the Step 1 case, but it could be decided at either one. And here, there is just uniform industry praise. It is almost certain that the luggage that you have now has a lock on it that has a symbol next to it, either a diamond, that's what Travel Center uses, or a flame, that's what Mr. Tropp's company uses for his locks, and that signals to TSA to use a particular key to open that lock. It's not a guess and check method. It is a virtual guarantee then that TSA will be able to take that bag and within a couple seconds open it and they can move on to the next one. So I don't think there's any kind of issue here over that there are benefits. It's just that Travel Sentry has argued that the benefits are irrelevant, but, you know, the Bascom case, Selston's case, Data Engine case, and Core Wireless case have talked about how the benefits are actually important to the Alice analysis. Just another thing, I just want to walk through briefly the particular elements of the claim that I think are at issue here. Just to emphasize that, you know, these claims contemplate specific physical improvements. Unlike a lot of the cases, nearly every case that Travel Sentry relies on, all of which come from the software context, where you simply take an existing method and say, apply it using a computer. Here, there's a new physical component, the special lock, which is defined in the specifications as one that works across key, pre-dial, four-dial locks, can be opened with a single master key. And that's at column 6, 8 to 15 of the 537 patent. And then in lines 13 to 18, we talk about how these locks are physically marked to allow a screening agent quickly and accurately to match the lock with the master key and open it without having to break the lock. And then in lines 31 to 37, we talk about the agreement with TSA to implement the process to bring that about. And one important innovation over the prior claims is that who has this master key? The 537 patent talks about this at column 4, lines 19 to 26, where it talks about how this key that will open this multiplicity of locks.
Okay, well, it's your rebuttal time. You want to continue or save it?
I believe that the clock started at 12 minutes.
I don't think it did.
I'll just make one quick point and then save the rest for rebuttal. At column 4, lines 19 to 26, it talks about the provision of a master key, and it says that access is going to be exclusive to the manufacturer of the lock and the luggage screening authority. These other earlier locks that had a duplicate key were simply given to customers and other people, and you can't have that. You can't realize the benefits of the patent here, which is preventing tampering with your luggage, if there is just all these extra keys out there. So that's just sort of one of the many benefits that this court recognized in its 2017 opinion are both, you know, sort of tangible and intangible benefits that the industry has realized. And I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
We will give you 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Prickett.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'd like to start with the claim language, the representative claim language, which is claim one of the 537 patent. There are basically four very simple steps to this claim. And I'm going to paraphrase much the way Mr. Tropp does in his brief at page 36. The first step is making available to consumers a special combination lock that has a combination portion and a master key portion. And it has a logo, also known as an identification structure in the language, but everyone agrees it's a logo that is recognizable by the TSA. Step two is marketing this lock to consumers so that they understand that the TSA can open the lock. Step three, the logo, signals to the TSA, who is screening the bag, that this is a lock that can be opened with a master key. And step four, the TSA looks for the logo, and if it decides that this bag needs an eyeball inspection, in addition to the X-ray inspection, it can use a master key previously provided to open that lock and then relock it and send it on its way.
Mr. Prickett, is it your argument that the making available paragraph all recites what's in the prior art?
There is nothing in the prior art that specifically says that, Your Honor, but it certainly is the case that for decades, locks have been made available in the sense that they are purchased by consumers. But more importantly, Your Honor, each of those steps, whether it's the making available step or the actual luggage screening step, is precisely the type of organizing human activity and economic behavior that is abstract. And in fact,
unless Mr. Prickett, the thing you say you're making available is a new technologically improved physical thing, which I take it actually is what Mr. Weiss' argument comes down to, although he wants to rely on the rest.
That is right, Judge Toronto. And in fact, as I think we make clear in our brief, there is actually nothing new about these dual access locks in terms of their technology. And I think that is why in his appeal, Mr. Tropp argues for the first time that he created a quote new lock, something that had not been seen before, something that allowed for the first time, despite the locking mechanism or combination configuration, to be opened with a single master key. The problem for Mr. Tropp, as you identify, Judge Toronto, is that there is nothing in the claim or even in the specification that supports that point. And also importantly, as I think you identified correctly, Judge Toronto, Mr. Tropp never made that argument below. If you look at his summary judgment opposition brief and specifically the pages that he cites in his reply brief, there is nothing about inventing a new type of lock.
I don't actually think that he cited the 101 summary judgment opposition, those pages in his reply brief. He cited the prior art summary judgment brief plus the 56.1. I don't think he cited, 1646 at the joint appendix, which is the 101 brief. But never mind for a minute the question of whether the point was preserved. Why is said in the spec, at least, not enough for 101 purposes as opposed to enablement purposes or description purposes as an indication that this term special lock has this one-to-many feature, common master lock component, multiple different combination components, without in any way saying what that means as a physical makeup matter inside this lock.
Your Honor, if I understand your question, I think I would look direct the court to the specification. There is simply no language in the specification that supports the notion or even implies it, that it can be opened with a single master key, regardless of its locking mechanism, or the new position, regardless of its combination configuration.
Let me ask the question this way.
Yep.
Suppose, just for purposes of this question, that I thought that the specification does indicate that, but doesn't say anything at all about how that is done inside the lock. It just says, we sure would like a lock, and we have in mind a lock in which there is a common master key component, and that works with a number of different combination components. Would that be enough for 101 purposes?
No, Your Honor, and here's the reason. And the reason is because, in fact, the locks are not changed. The technology involved with these locks is the same technology that has existed for decades prior to these patent applications. And the master lock technology is a perfect example of that. When you have a master lock that is a 1525 lock, is one of the models, where it can be opened by a single master key, regardless of different locks, that is precisely the technology that was involved in developing these locks. And without more in the specification, you simply can't conclude that there's anything other than a conventional dual access lock here. Let me provide a real world example, which I think helps explain the point here. When one moves into a new house or a new apartment, what's the first thing one typically does? You call a locksmith to change the lock. And when that locksmith arrives, she doesn't take the lock out of the door. What she will do is she will reconfigure the lock so that it works for a different key. And that technology has existed for a very long time. And that same technology would allow that locksmith to go down to the next house and do the exact same thing for the exact same key, and the next house, and the next house, and the next house. It's simply reconfiguring the key portion of the lock. And you would never do that. You would never have the same key work on every house in town for obvious reasons. But in the context of the screening mandate that was issued by Congress, it all of a sudden made sense to have a single master key standard that would work across multiple manufacturers. And so
can I just pursue this? As I hear what you're saying, you are making an assumption, and this is the assumption that is at the center of my thinking about this. You're making an assumption that the master key component of one of these dual openable locks is independent physically of the combination part of it, so that just changing the keying on the key component doesn't have any collateral effects on the combination component. And therefore, it doesn't matter how many different master keys you have. The combination with the combination with the combination component doesn't change at all. And that, I guess, is the fact that I don't understand what the state of the record is.
Okay. Let me say this, Your Honor. I'm not sure if it's completely unconnected. In other words, the master key, mechanically, the master key portion will override a locking mechanism that is also attached to the combination mechanism. So they're not completely detached. And that technology, whether we're talking about master lock from the 1970s, or Safe Skies Travel Sentry marked locks from today. That's the case. The point I'm making, Your Honor, is the technology has never changed between what existed 30 years ago and what is existing today. The methodology of making these locks work has not changed. And that's the fact. And I think you can look to the testimony that Mr. Tropp himself cited in the appendix, which is Mr. Ellis's testimony at the very back of the appendix. And that's at 2877. And Mr. Ellis is the Samsonite witness, the first witness deposed in this case back in 2007. And he was testifying. He was a fact witness who had knowledge about the Samsonite locks. And he was asked the question, How is this Travel Sentry lock mechanically different from the locks you had before that could be opened with a master key? And he said it's essentially unchanged. I think that hopefully answers your question, Justin. So turning to Alice Step 2, I think the reason why TROP doesn't get past Alice Step 1, I think I've made clear, and that is these are abstract claims, perhaps as abstract, if not the most abstract claims this court has been asked to construe since 2014. And there is no improvement articulated anywhere in the claims, whether it's the representative claim or any other claim, to the actual lock in the manner in which Trott argues in his brief for the first time on appeal. And turning to step two, Mr. Trott cannot pass step two because there is no innovative concept here for the same reasons I just articulated in response to Judge Toronto's question. That is, there is nothing new about these locks. This methodology, except for the logistical necessity following the congressional mandate of reducing the number of master keys, the method of screening luggage is exactly the same as the prior method before these patents were applied for. And indeed, we are not talking about innovation here. We are talking about a logistical exercise. And that's what Travel Century did. It met with the lock and luggage manufacturers around the world and got them to agree to a lock master lock standard. And that's all this is. There's no new technology, no new method, simply having each manufacturer agree that it makes sense to have one key that works on their lock as well as their competitor's lock for purposes of airport travel on luggage. And that, Your Honors, we submit is not an innovative innovative concept at all. Unless there are questions about the 101 argument, I'm going to turn to the briefly to the expert report issue. The district court did not abuse its discretion in striking a portion, not the entirety, but a portion of Mr. Ladd's expert report. First of all, there's a very high bar to show abuse of discretion, and Mr. Trott doesn't even address that in his argument. He does identify a piece of prior art that was submitted in Travel Century's summary judgment motion. But that piece of prior art was addressed only for the issue of obviousness. And if you look at Mr. Ladd's report, the only place he discusses the U patent is in the section of his report that addresses obviousness, not eligibility. And the only portion that, of the report that was stricken was eligibility, not obviousness. He also, in his opposition brief, expressly stated that he didn't think this report was important, that he could survive summary judgment without this report. And I think the district court was well within its discretion to take Trott at his word. And there was nothing in his argument below limiting that statement to the burden shifting of summary judgment that he now argues. There was a prior magistrate judge order in the case that precluded any new expert disclosures other than those that addressed new discovery exchanged during the 2019 discovery exchange. And there's nothing in the eligibility section of that report which covers any new discovery. So the district court was well within its discretion to find that that was an issue. And finally, ultimately, the district court was faced with a question of law. And the district court was within its discretion to decide that it didn't need the opinion of another to make that legal determination. And so for those reasons, Your Honors, there was no abuse of discretion below on that particular decision. I see that my time has expired. Unless there are further questions, Your Honors.
Can I just ask, in this prior art that was discussed, say the Samsonite or any of the other prior art, was there an instance, does the record tell us whether there was an instance of the same master key opening what would what were different kinds of combination components?
I'm not aware of anything that would state that, Judge Toronto. And in fact, I would submit to you that it would never have made any sense competitively for a master lock, master key to work on a Samsonite lock for obvious reasons.
I'm sorry. I don't really care in my question about the manufacture of the thing. Let's say, is there any indication that Samsonite, to simplify it, marketed two different locks, one with a four dial combination, one with a three, and both of them use the same key for the same master key?
I don't believe that was ever done, and I don't know of anything in the record that suggested that, but the technology to accomplish that always exists. And that's an important point that we make.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Weiss, we'll give you 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Just a few quick points to emphasize here at the end. I just want to say at the outset that, this is a Travel Sentry's argument here, and certainly in its brief, sort of confuses the 101 Alice issue here and 102 and 103. This is not about sort of novelty or non-obviousness, and that's what a lot of these arguments go to about the differences between this lock and locks before it. I want to address just quickly to the preservation issue in the 101 briefing. If you look at pages 1659 and pages 1663 of the appendix, we talk about sort of the physical component here, the special lock, and the second page on 1663, we talk about how this differs from earlier, this differs sort of physically from earlier dual access locks. I don't want to belabor the point. That point is made much more strongly in the statement of material disputed facts. It's also made in the lab's declaration, where labs talks about how the master key opens a special lock regardless of how the user operated lock portion functions. Also, as I mentioned before, this is detailed in the patents themselves. The specifications define special lock. The district court and Travel Sentry sort of mocked the continuing reference to special lock, but this court's cases say that you have to look to the patent specifications to provide a definition for these terms, and special lock is defined in the patent. If you look at column 4, lines 56 to 59, it defines special lock as working across a variety of these configurations.
Mr. White, I just want to come back to the subject on which I've been harping. Tell me where on 1663 you think the argument we're now talking about was made.
Well, on 1663...
And you also said 1659.
1659, yeah.
I'd like to hear about both of them.
Okay, sure. 1659, we talk about in the first full paragraph that Travel Sentry is wrong when it argues the claims are not directed to any physical components. It talks about the lock, and it uses the term special lock.
But it doesn't say, and by special lock, we mean one that has a single master key with multiple different combinations.
It does not say that directly.
Okay, and what about 1663?
It doesn't say it directly at 1663 either, but it talks about how this is not simply, this is in the penultimate paragraph about how this is not applying a conventional device, the dual access lock here. And that means the extent that the prior art is relevant here, none of these earlier locks, the 1525 master lock, none of these worked across different locking mechanisms or configurations. I mean, I'm somewhat surprised that Travel Sentry is now taking the position that the patent doesn't state an innovation over the prior art, at least in terms of the configuration of the lock. There was an argument over semantics. I see that my time has expired.
You can finish your final thought.
Perfect. Thank you. There was an argument over semantics, over whether locking mechanisms is the same thing as locking configuration, but Travel Sentry basically conceded that the patents describe a master key that can work across locking configurations. And in fact, locking mechanisms is the way that Travel Sentry has described different types of combination locks, the way the industry has described it, and the way that Mr. Truck's patent describes it at column 5, lines 58 to 60. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the court reverse the district court's decision.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is submitted.